In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi guys, and welcome back to Seat at the Table. We are Stephanie,
Naima,
and my name is Ingrid.
And today we're going to be talking about an interview we made with Madame Gandhi at Roskilde Festival 2019.
Yeah, and if you're wondering why we're speaking in English, you're not on a different channel. This is still a Seat at the Table. The interview we did with Madame Gandhi was in English, and we've found it to be suiting for us to continue this conversation in English as well. So also for our non-Danish speakers, so they feel a little more included and get an incentive to get into the club.
And learn Danish.
Sorry, no.
She said that.
Yeah.
I didn't.
No. And it's the first time that we're actually recording together after 8 months.
Yeah.
So bear with us. We never do it easy for ourselves, huh? Mm.
Both that we haven't been recording for 8 months and that it's in English.
Yes.
Charting new waters. All right. So today we'll be talking about activism, feminism, and
Madame Gandhi.
And Madame Gandhi, yeah.
But all of this is due to the International Women's Day, which is the 8th of March, so it's just around the corner.
All right, so we'll start this episode with a bit of the interview. For our listeners who don't know you, could you introduce yourself?
Definitely. My name is Kiran. I perform as Madame Gandhi. I am Indian American, grown up in New York City. I play the drums. I grew up playing the drums from a young age. I've played drumming for MIA, for Thievery Corporation, for Kehlani, Lizzo, some of my favorite artists. In 2015, I ran the London Marathon. I ran it free bleeding on my period to combat the global menstrual stigma that women and girls and trans men face all around the world. And when that story went viral, I started performing and producing my own music that explores themes of fourth wave feminism, of gender liberation and empowerment. And this is my second year performing at Roskilde Festival in Denmark.
Welcome to Denmark and Roskilde again in in particular. Let me just go straight into it. We would like to know why it's important for you not to only come and perform, but to also take part in what's happening around you, engaging in a conversation with us, for example.
For me, the music was always just a medium through which I can explore my own activism and passion for gender liberation. It wasn't like I was a pop artist and then decided to champion a cause later on. My journey was different. I always, from a young age, knew that I wanted to engage and talk about gender equality and in a global sense. And so whenever I travel, it's not just about showing up to a venue and giving a show. It's about meeting folks who are doing the work in different parts of the world and learning both of us from each other. It's about collaborating with local musicians. You know, I get to rehearse for 3 days with a team of all Danish women who are going to be my band on Saturday. And in the process of rehearsing, you get to learn so much from each other, you know. It's such a pleasure. I also asked Roskilde when they were booking me that this year, just like last year, I wanted to give a talk again. Because, like I said, music is one way that I teach my message, but through giving speeches and workshops is another way that I get to teach my message, and it inspires other people. 2 years ago, when I came to Roskilde, and I was at the merchandise table afterwards, a young woman came up to me and said, "Madam Gandhi, I have been holding off from running for Danish Parliament, but after your show, I'm gonna run, I'm gonna do it." And so these are the reasons to engage on a very person-to-person level.
Yes.
Yeah, so Stephanie and I, Ingrid, were the only two conducting the interview. That's why you're not hearing Naima's voice during those recording. Anyway, you just heard Madame Gandhi talk about how she ran free bleeding in the streets of London 5 years ago. Just to get in the groove and the move and the flow and the motion.
In the ocean, the motion
of this English episode.
I don't think that relates to menstruation. The ocean in the motion.
Oh yes.
Motion. There's a lot of motion in that ocean.
There's a lot of motion in that red ocean.
Yeah. It's true. No, yeah. I've never free bled. Is that the word?
That's how you say it.
Yeah. Stephanie, have you free bled? Ever free bled before?
I can't actually remember. I think I have at some point, like when I was younger, just because I didn't care.
Why?
Because I don't really bleed. So, I mean, if five drops comes out in my underwear, it doesn't have the... I mean, if I was bleeding a lot and, like, I would be wet from blood, then maybe I wouldn't have done it.
Well, I, for one, have a actual motion in the ocean of my flotation. So I bleed a lot and I change pads a lot. I empty my cup a lot. So I would never flea bleed.
Flea bleed.
I would never flea bleed.
But it's also, in my mind, I feel like menstruation is something that is supposed to come out of your body. And I don't know why I think that, as if it's something that...
So it's dirty?
Maybe. I don't know. And I think it's a very private thing. And somebody might say it's ingrained in me and society and blah, blah, blah. But if one time I saw a woman in the metro who had bled through her pants, and I actually told her, and I think the mortification in her
face
was like, "I wish you have not told me, because now I have to go to work and I don't know what to do about it." Like, So I think there's something in society that is something that we should hide. So for her, Madame Gandhi, to run a marathon
and
bleed through her pants for more than 4 hours, I think that's a very strong statement.
Yeah, I mean, there is no level of courage that I will ever get to where I could allow myself to
run these streets bleeding.
Yeah, to really like be open about my bodily functions like that.
But is there anything else you guys could do, like with your own body, with yourselves, that would be an activistic statement?
I mean, there's a lot of things. Just before we recorded this episode, we were just talking about how we as brown and black women here in Denmark can be politicized, and just being sometimes can become a radical thing.
Being a black woman.
Being a black or brown woman can become a radical thing.
The funny thing with something like that is, for example, if I walk down the streets with a scarf around my hair, tied up in a more African way, then people will look at me more than if I don't do it. But if I have one of my Danish friends, she does it a lot. And no one comments on it, only that it looks nice. So in that way, it's quite clear how big a difference it is that if I, as a brown woman, choose to wear a scarf around my hair, then it's a noticeable thing. And people will look twice. So it's kind of a statement that I'm walking around with a scarf tied around my hair. Whereas if a white woman does it, it's not as big as a thing.
Steph, does it make you or you, Naima, shy away from certain stuff because you know that it become a political statement? Or does it motivate you to do something more explicitly because you know that you are affecting a dialogue in society? Or
I think if you asked me 5 years ago, then I might have said, or I would have said, that I try to blend in as much as possible. So I relax my hair. I try to only wear black clothes, because we all had that experience that people say, oh, yellow is so good looking on black people. And I think today I'm trying to actually take up that space and not shrink myself. I've tried to shrink myself previously just to be able to be and exist. Whereas today I'm aware that it's an active choice I take. It's an active choice that I have my natural hair, that sometimes I put in a scarf, that I only wear bright colored clothes because it makes me happy and not because I want to stand out, or because we always do that. We do that in every room we're in because we happen to live in a very white world. So it doesn't matter what I do with my hair. It doesn't matter what kind of colored clothes I wear. Just the color of my skin makes me stand out. So why not just give in?
So I hear you talking about your hair and your clothes, but it's also like a mental shift that has happened in yourself. What has been the defining switch you had to do? Did you just mature, or what made you realize that you actually don't want to shrink yourself anymore?
I think it helps to live in a world where we have all types of role models. That we have all these people showing that you can get a music deal or a video deal or get the promotion that you deserve, even though that you have natural hair. I think it helps that Issa Rae makes videos. I think it helps that Madame Gandhi is on festivals. And I think it helps that she demands to also give a talk and also to be there in person besides playing the music, which gives the courage that it's okay to be who you are.
Stephanie, do you also feel inspired by women like Madame Gandhi to be more truthful to yourself when you're out in the world, but also just internally?
I mean, it definitely helps to have role models as Madame Gandhi and as other women, especially colored or black or brown women. Because I know it takes a lot of courage within me the days that I choose to wear a scarf on my head. I need to be in a certain kind of mood to do it. But the more other women I see do it, the more courage I get to do it as well.
What about you, Ingrid?
I think I've always felt that it was political. Even as a little girl, the images that I was surrounded with in Rwanda were both Eurocentric, but also there were certain expectations of how a little girl or a young girl is supposed to look like. I have pictures of myself being 4, 5, and 6 years old with short boyish cuts because I thought that was the cool haircuts. So I demanded to have the cool haircuts and not the braids because that's what I liked, and maybe somehow I've always been, I don't know if it's really rebellious, but yeah, I think I always been like that. As a young woman, I've definitely shrunk myself. I think it's very hard not to when you're the only person who looks like you in a room, but I've also done very vigilant self-work to unlearn a lot of things that I both have learned from home, from society, and from friends that I knew instinctively didn't apply to how I saw myself. And that is how my body looked. And I have a very standard body. There is really not a it's not really a controversial thing, but I matured very quickly. So I had breasts before all the other girls in class, and I had hair on my body way before them. And I felt different in that account. I felt different being a black girl. I felt different with the interests that I had and the level of intellect that I had as well. I never really felt that I had the space to just unfold naturally. Can you tell us what motivates your activism?
I guess maybe the right answer is empathy. I think since I was a kid, I was like the kind of kid who would like talk to my animals and like make sure my room was okay. Like I thought like everything had feelings, you know. Even to this day, I travel all the time, but I always say bye to my bed. I say bye to my loft. I say bye to my instruments. Even if I leave a hotel room, I thank the hotel room. Like, thank you, you know, bye. Like, yeah, I don't know. I have a spiritual sense that way. And I think empathy makes you have an activist spirit, because if you know what it feels like to be hurt or for someone to be oppressive to you, you never want that to be the same for someone else. And so maybe that's the biggest motivator, is empathy, the understanding of, you know what it's like to experience sexism, you would never want somebody else to experience that same pain.
It comes from within. It's not something you've learned from home or you've
I think I always felt these things, but never had the intelligent words or tools to explain them. And so when I did go to study in college and I minored in women's and gender studies, it really was so powerful for me, because it put words and explanation and logic and reason into things that I already felt motivated from the heart.
But you maybe just didn't know how exactly to explain it. So now you also have the verbal tools to actually explain why and what you're doing. But so what do you hope to achieve from your activism?
I think for me, the thing that would make me the most happy is to see young women and femmes depicted in the most freest and liberated state, where we won't have to think so much about our looks before we do anything else. People ask me, okay, Kieran, like, how do we get more women in music? Like, why don't we have as many female guitarists or female drummers as we have male drummers, blah, blah, blah. If you look at an equal girl and an equal boy in teenage years, they may have both been playing the guitar or drums for the same amount of years. But by the time they hit puberty, all of the advertising and all of us, what we do as a society, is teach girls that the only thing that we value them for is their looks. So what do young girls start doing? They start focusing on makeup, hair, nails, selfies, all these different things. That whatever generation, we have our own version of it. And so if you give one gender 24 hours in a day and you give the other gender exactly the same 24 hours in the day, but one gender gets to practice guitar all day long, whereas the other gender is half the time practicing guitar and half the time perfecting their looks, of course we're never going to be as good at the instruments as the boys are. And eventually we put down the instrument, because what are we valued for? How pretty we are, not how good at guitar we are. So this is the kind of thing that I'm trying to abolish. Women are so hot as soon as we come out of the womb. We don't need to be putting extra work into our look.
So it's also a lot about dismantling the conditioning that we get from society. Is that a part of your work?
Yes, because the people who I've always felt like are the most attractive, where I'm just like, wow, like you are a goddess, are the ones who are most effortlessly themselves.
Right.
You can be the most makeuped, you know, like, you know, ideal quote-unquote body, whatever the body type you know is for the week, you could be all those things, but if you don't look comfortable in your own skin, you know, it's not hot, it's not attractive.
So staying on the topic of bodies and looks and such, you mentioned your marathon run where you free bleeding. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I would like to ask you how you deal with using your body and self in general, and your intersectionality, so to say, in your activism?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Using yourself as a tool.
I think it's all about being real, being honest. And sometimes it takes a lot of bravery to be honest. But the marathon story, with all of its backlash and how big it was, I was never expecting that. I think I was able to go through that because it was such a sincere act. Like, I just didn't want to run with a tampon because I was fucking afraid of what would happen. Like, I didn't think it made sense to have something like that for 4 hours to run a race. I don't know what people did, but to me, that didn't feel logical. Yeah. It wasn't meant to be a performance art piece, even though that's what it ended up being. Totally. And so I think it's about being honest. You know, in my next album, I'm excited. I get to talk about, like, way more themes of, like, queer love, way more themes of being Indian American, way more themes of, like, female pleasure, self-pleasure, all these different things that we don't talk about. And especially being, you know, daughter of immigrant parents, like, you're not rewarded for, like, being yourself. You're rewarded for being a doctor.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to achieve, like, a long education, exactly, a really good education, a well-paid job, and
yeah. And before you know it, you're in your 50s and you're like, what did I do? Like, I have a degree on my wall and I can just look at it every day. Like, what the fuck?
And maybe also, like, who am I actually?
Who am I?
Like, am I these books and these studies, or am I me?
And does my barista miss me when I travel? Do people even care? Yeah. Am I cool? Do people fuck with me? If I ask for help, do they say yes or do they ignore my email? That's the kind of thing. Every time I go to the gym, or anytime I, like, I'm out listening to, like, the top EDM or trap music, I'm, like, aghast at how normalized misogyny has become in our society. Like, no one even bats an eye. And they're talking about, like, violent things. And it's just, like, cool. Like, we're all going to fucking dance to it as if it's, like, a non-issue. And it really upsets me. It really upsets me. It's in the EDM. It's in the trap. It's in all of it. So I'm not here to tell other people how to make their music, but I am here to provide the alternative and use the exact same methodology, which is to make amazing music that people want to listen to and dance to no matter what, but then infuse a message that's positive and uplifting and educational, as opposed to one that is oppressive and silently misogynist. So that's why it's important to bring a message like this in a space like Roskilde, because Travis Scott will perform tonight and say all types of ratchet, exactly, sexist, yeah, things, yeah, but then Madam Gandhi will perform on Saturday and say something positive. So at least you get the whole gamut.
And that's what you do. I mean, you're not only talking about how it's bad for our mental hygiene to listen to, yeah, like, misogynistic words in songs and even see it in movies and all that, but you're also showing a way of enjoying the same culture, but not...
Yes, and let me ask you ladies this, because I'm sure you explore this theme in your podcast. One thing that I think a lot about, too, that I don't like, is when I see Caucasian and white folks turning up to all the hip-hop and all the trap. And I think that that creates a bigger rift between women of different races, because I feel like women listen to the trap music and they don't see themselves as the women that the men are putting down. Yes. They don't see themselves as the women in the strip clubs or the women who these men are surrounding themselves with. So they don't mind to contribute to the sexism by singing along with it. Instead of saying, no, I'm not going to play this at my fucking spin class. I'm not going to play this at my fucking Lululemon yoga class. Like, where I'm not going to DJ this music. Like, attacking women of color is attacking all women. But that doesn't happen. We otherize each other. Like, oh, I'm not in the strip club. I'm not this. I'm not that. I'm not broke. I'm not this.
Yeah, it's not me that he's talking about. I'm not a stripper and I'm not this and I'm not that. But I also think that type of, I guess, rhetoric has been normalized in such a way that you don't think about it. I'm happy to see that, I guess, from here in Denmark, it's become more and more important to say no to the N-word, for example.
I wish you also couldn't say the B-word. Yeah. As much as we can't say the N-word, don't say the fucking B-word either. That's what I don't like. Yeah. But we are happy to say bitch, hoe, bad bitch, this and that. I don't like all that.
But it's like, it's also because it's become such a normal thing for people to hear, and especially younger people. So it's just like, it's a cool image. If I can, like, I'll take these words upon me and use them as, like, an image, and this will make me cool. Whereas instead of just thinking about, like, what you're actually saying, they don't really think about the meaning behind the word and how degrading it actually
is. Men are rapping or singing about degrading women and they make it look cool. And I do agree with that. But we as women have to be more intelligent than aspiring to male standards of cool that oppress us. But you're so right. All of us want to rap like that and listen to it in the car because you do feel good. But we have to be smart enough to feel good at our own expense? No.
Yeah, I think you're so right about us as women especially being vigilant and saying, no, we don't want to listen to that. We don't want to look at that. Because as long as there's no demand for it, I guess it will stop. I hope, at least. Okay, so we just heard Madame Gandhi talk about how she performs her feministic activism in her music and why it's important for her to bring forth these subjects. I would like to ask us the same question. Because we are approaching International Women's Day, as we started this episode with, why is it important continually to talk about feminism?
Well, so the question is, why is feminism still so important?
Yeah, or just why do we want to talk about it in our circle today in 2020?
Naima, you go ahead.
At my work, we have a yearly conference. And at every conferences I go to, I talk loudly and on social media about the diversity on stages, in the programs, whatsoever. So everyone at my work knows my stand. And last week I saw the program. So we hired someone to do the program, the conference. So I saw the program and I was actually really sad that we did the same thing as I blame everyone else to do. We almost have all male panels. All the panels about diversity and inclusion is after 4 p.m. at a conference that starts at 8:45.
So that's when everyone's really tired and want to go home.
And left. Mm. So in a stadium with 500 people, there will be 35 people. And it's understandable because you've been talking to so many people, you're exhausted. I said that out loud, and the response was, it is what it is. We just have to make it work. And today when I went to work, I was really sad. I wanted to cry because it was so obvious that the people making this conference, it's not their struggle. Mm. It's not their problem. So that's why it's easy for them to say, we just have to live with it. It's sad for me to see that the place I work, people are willing to fight the fight, but not actually do it. So it's greenwashing. So it's easy to say, oh, we go in for diversity, and then only take the women that approach you and don't actually put in the work to get all the inspirational women that are actually doing a lot of jobs and really well. And I was so tired that I actually went into a phone booth because I didn't know how to respond to this. I couldn't have my name on this. Like, I have called out people on LinkedIn and now I'm inviting them for our own conference. And then we did the same bullshit. And I was so exhausted that I actually had to call different friends and say, I don't know how to do this. Should I write an email? Should I put in my resignation. Where does the battle stop and where is it just a job that pays the bills? So I've come to the conclusion that it's really important to talk loudly about feminism as in equal rights to everyone, but it's also very clear sometimes when you are in a very wide space that education doesn't come easy. And as the minority, it's really shit if you have to do the work at the same time as you being the one
being put down.
Yeah. So I think it's awesome that someone as Madame Gandhi actually goes to a festival and does whatever she's paid to do. But I also think it would be okay if she said sometimes, I just want to rest. I want to play my gig and go home and rest. I think it's admirable that she does the talk and she says yes to talk to us and do the interview. But it's really tiring. Mm. And I don't know if that answered the question, but in my private life, it's really difficult. And it's sometimes being ridiculed for believing in something that is equal rights.
Mm. Yeah. I think that was a very good answer to that question.
Maybe this is a little off topic, but this is a subject we also talk a lot about in our own podcast, trying to find our own ways, being the young females we are, coming from families who, for the most part, have other values than what we now perhaps value because they come from different circumstances. Does your family support your work, and do they see what you're changing in not only maybe your close community, but up to here in Scandinavia? Yeah,
thank you. I think I'm blessed to have a mother who's a visionary. She's a visionary. She gets it. I don't even need to say the words out loud or show her a picture or tell her. Like, she just gets it. And I think that's really validating. She also is smart that she didn't inherit the Indian parenting style, which is like, I love you when you achieve something. You know, the conditional kind of love feedback loop, which is really detrimental, actually. And it's a very masculine way of loving also. It's like, do something for me, then I'll give you love. It's a kind of how we reward men and women in our society today. Like, give me sex and I'll love you. Like, it's really quite problematic. My dad, I think he definitely grew up with the conditioning of Indian parenting. But it's interesting because as I get older, I almost see the negative ramifications of his own father giving him love based on achievements. Because my dad will still send emails to all of the family being like, look at this amazing thing that I did today. And he's in his 50s, you know, he's still looking for that validation. So sometimes I feel like I have to switch roles and be the parent and be like, listen, this is so programmed into him. I can't inherit that. So, but then there's other days where, like, I do just wish that he would give that love to me. I do, because it's also programmed in me.
But of course, you would always want your parents' validation and love and, I mean, concern. That is a very natural human thing, but also a natural thing as a child of someone to want that as well. But with your work now that you have done for quite some years, can you feel that maybe that's changed your dad a little bit and his views and ways of maybe interacting with you as well?
I think so. You know, he came to my 30th birthday and gave a speech, which was really sweet. And I think the one thing that really touched me is he said that in his life, he'll think, what would Kiran do? That's my name. What would my daughter do in this situation? So that makes me happy. I think also the way I win my dad over is like, I don't talk to him when I'm like in between major achievements. I just like lay low. Yeah. And then I like give him the like major updates. I'm like, oh, like Forbes just listed me 30 under 30, or like my TED talk has like 200,000 views, you know, like shit like that. Like, that's what they understand.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have to
make sense the process. No, like, what does this, that mean? What are you doing here? And what's going to become of that?
Why are you doing this? Yeah. What will come out of this? I don't get it.
We would like to end our little conversation with asking you if you can give some good advice for other artists or just people in general as to what they can do to take part, a bigger part in feministic activism.
I think that the number one piece of advice is to keep it honest. Like, on some days, I'm not an activist. On some days, I'm just like vacationing, and I put that on my Instagram. Like, I'm not like trying to hide and only put whatever is like glossy and beautiful. Like, we have to be enjoying ourselves in order to stay positive with the activism. Do you know what I mean? We have to be honest. That's it. Like, sometimes I listen to music podcasts and they're like, post on Instagram and network and write music every day and go into the studio every hour. And it's like, okay, that's great. I hope that you can do that. I don't have that kind of stamina. I need to stay happy. My number one fuel is when I stay joyful. And honestly, those examples that I just gave, that's like a very masculine way of thinking about things to begin with. It's like, grind. I'm always grinding. You know how men use the hashtag
very
on Instagram?
Performative.
Yeah, performative. Yeah. They're very like, you know, they do hashtag no days off. Yeah. They love this. Yeah. You're like, you're a dumbass if you don't take a day off from the gym.
Work hard, play hard.
Yeah, exactly. That's a very, I learned that in yoga. Someone was teaching me how the men always push to their edge, but the very feminine energy is to actually find your center. It's a very mama energy. Like, you know, if mama's burnt out, she can't take care of everybody, let alone herself. So that's my advice, is be honest. When you need to sleep, sleep. When you're excited to play the drums and work and make music, go and do that. When you're excited to hang and do a podcast with incredible fellow women, do that. Keep it honest.
So, but maybe also be more aware of for example, what we just talked about, what kind of music do you listen to? Who do you look up to? Who's like, what do they do? What do they say? What's the what are they portraying? And is that something that you actually agree with? Would you want someone to address you in that way?
Exactly. Yeah. Mute button on Instagram. You might want to follow them to support them, but if they're putting out stuff that's oppressive, just turn on that mute button.
Yeah.
And also just let them know. I guess first thing to change is also knowledge, you know? Some people just don't know that they're doing stuff wrong because they've never been told. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. We look forward to seeing you on Saturday, both at your performance and also your talk and Chroma, House of Chroma. I keep saying it wrong and forgetting, and enjoy your time here.
Cheers.
In Denmark.
Perfect.
We could all apply what Madame Gandhi says in this interview when she says that it's also important to
rest
because it's a radical act to just be yourself, especially when you're a racialized minority in these parts of the world. So we have to give ourselves the permission to just sleep once in a while.
So we came through this interview.
we actually did it, and we did it in English.
Yes, so I think we should give ourselves applause. Ingrid, I applaud you for editing this episode.
Thank you. That would definitely get
edited in.
In the episode.
I think we should just end it here.
Before we end it, we're recording this episode because in a minute it will be the 8th of March, which is the International Women's Day. And on that note, we would like to recommend some activities for you to attend. Yeah. Steph, go ahead.
So I actually stumbled upon this event and I really liked it because it's Katarina Andersen who is going to be telling 10 biblical stories that all feminists should know about. But she's doing it in the synagogue in Copenhagen. I'm not sure. But I don't think she's Jewish.
No, she's Catholic.
Right?
She's
Catholic. She is Catholic.
Yeah.
So that's actually, I think, just that she's allowed to tell 10 biblical stories in a synagogue is quite a big thing.
Well, Jesus was a Jew, so.
Yeah.
But I mean, still though. But I like it, and I actually like the fact that she's dug so deep in history as to tell biblical stories in that sense.
We could argue if the Bible is history, but okay.
Yeah,
but
I know what you mean.
The Bible is his story, no?
Not her story.
No.
No. I want to recommend an event called Kvinder på Pladsen in Danish. It's planned by Send Flere Krydderier, which is a social company run by minority women who makes very delicious food. So there will be delicious food. Ooh. It's from 4. It's at Nørrebrohallen. And please go there. It's really interesting.
And I hope at this event that those women will get paid for once.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Lastly, I would like to recommend an event at Copenhagen's main library that goes by the name of Minority Feminism, Minoritetsfeminisme in Danish, which will be organized by Nadine, Dina, and Ingrid Marie from Mino Denmark. I'm recommending this because no doubt there's a lack of representation of minorities in feministic organizations. And even though all minorities are not represented, there's a greater number of representation at this event than most events. And their focus will be on identity, diversity, and representation with a rather amazing and ambitious lineup of female panelists. So if they keep their promise, I think it will be several interesting talks to experience. Yeah. So just for that, A for efforts.
And just try to broaden your horizon. Try to go somewhere else than you did last year.
And if you're the type that doesn't want to go anywhere, it's also okay to stay at home. You can still, in your own time and in your own safe space, read up on things, read about things, listen to things. There are a lot of other podcasts besides us that will be sending out episodes about this special day. So you don't have to go out, you can stay at home. But if you go out, please choose wisely.
Right, so congratulations. You have
made it to the end.
Made it to the end of this Denglish episode from A Seat at the Table.
It's African Denglish.
Yes.
Yeah. I think Auntie Naija can come back now.
Bye, Felicia.
Bye.
Deuces.